Now, this documents the incidents in your early life as a 19-year-old embarking on a writing career. What was it like returning to such early life experiences with this celebrated but dangerous artist?
Look, it didn't feel like I was making a great return. I had really just finished the book that was based on those years and then started writing the screenplay with the director of the film, Thomas Wright. But in the course of making the film, and it took several years after we started on the screenplay to get it made, I suppose I was asked to and had to reflect in more sophisticated ways than I had on why it is I stayed in the claustrophobic situation that I was in writing Adam's biography, and why it is I kept going back when it became increasingly vexing and violent and unpleasant.
So those sort of interesting sort of power dynamics between an established artist and a young writer. How well do you think the sort of film depicts the sort of relationship of, you know, that you developed?
I think the film does a terrific job in recreating in a very meticulous way the experience of being around Adam, but also the emotional terrain that he and I were plotting in the course of me writing the book about him. I think when I watch the film, I feel a great sense of familiarity. There's a sense of the uncanny. And in certain respects, the house that Adam lived in, that I spent much of the time in, had been recreated in a very painstaking way. And Dan Henshall, who plays Adam Cullen, who's best known for his performance in Snowtown, firstly looks exactly like Adam, but also embodied a great deal of his character, was able to sort of breathe a life and familiarity into that. And Toby Wallace, who plays my character, although he looks nothing like me, gave a great sense of the fragility and the anxiety and the uncertainness and the eagerness that I felt at that time.
What I found fascinating also was the dynamics between the biographer and the artist. I mean, I think I was thinking more of like recent films, like there's a recent one about David Foster Wallace, End of the Tour, and I just thought that's fascinating, that sort of struggle between the sort of the biographer trying to document the sort of flaws of the glass of every sort of Adam Cullen, of any sort of individual you're covering, and, you know, that sort of extent with which Adam is obviously trying to resist the biographer sort of talking to other people about his life because he feels, you know, uncomfortable about that.
Yeah, I mean, Adam had an urgent desire to be remembered. He knew the entire time I was working on the book that he would die, and that inescapable truth hung over everything that we discussed. So much of the first few years of working on this book, the only truth was the knowledge of his death. He was adept in his own fictions. He was constantly projecting a vision of himself into the world, and indeed living a version of that self. You know, his lies fascinated me, and they were sometimes so obviously lies and other times more subtly so. But as we got further into the project and it became more obvious his time was limited, he felt a different kind of urgency to truth and really, I think, started to know that if he was to leave something behind, it would have to be more substantial than the cartoon of himself he'd been projecting. And so we did get into interviews that felt pressing and honest and true in a way that the first few years were not.
So this must have been a very formative time of your life. Only 19, early on the film, in your interactions with Adam, you were shot at, you're thrown off a motorbike. You discover the biography that you were writing actually has not been commissioned. You tell us, what were the sort of forces that you kept drawing you back to Wentworth Falls to talk to Adam?
Many of them were uncomplicated for me at that time. I was working as a journalist at the Sydney Morning Herald. I was incredibly curious about Adam as a subject and very keen to understand what he meant and who he was. And then as it became clearer that I was being pulled into something quite claustrophobic, I was kept there by this desire to succeed at the task I'd set for myself, which was to write this book, but also pressed in by the embarrassment that would come from having to confess that he'd lied to me about the book contract that I thought had brought me there, and that he was lying to me about all sorts of things. I became certain that to get through this, I had to finish it. I had to pass out the other side of it and write the book, or else I'd be trapped in the embarrassments.
In developing the screenplay, how difficult was it to structure what's a lot of, you know, impressions and observations into like a film narrative? So how did you go about adapting it to a screenplay?
Well, look, the book itself isn't very much about art, and the film is not very much about art. Adam is an artist. That's the first point of interest that I have in him and that the film has in him. But he is much more quickly becomes a character in a contradiction and a sort of a construct that needs to be understood. And in adapting the screenplay, I think we took the source material of the book, which is my attempt to understand Adam, but the narrative became a narrative that involved the journalist, me, in a much more substantial way. It became about the relationship that I was caught in that produced the book, not about the book per se. The book is a biography, and this film is not a biopic. This film is a film about how two men at different points in their lives with different motivations become dangerously entwined in each other's affairs, and how it is they resolve the shifting power dynamics and instabilities of that relationship.
This is obviously pretty difficult to explain, but I mean, how would you describe Adam's drive as an artist? He talks about art as pain relief, as palliative care in the film, and how he refused to take mother's milk as a child. How much of this is he drawing from just a mythical conception of the artist, you know, wrestling with demons? Did you come up with any sort of idea of how much of his persona is performative and how much of it's authentic?
Look, a lot of the persona is performative, but it tells you something about the person he wanted to be, and it tells you something about the person he became. So much of his work is about understanding the instability of the Australian myth, the kind of kismo of the Australia that he was interested in. And I think he painted that machismo always with the undertow of impotence and the pathetic. And in those ways, his art, which was portraiture often, at least his painted work, contained the impulses of self-portraiture also. And you know, I think that's one of the things that I found interesting as his biographer, was trying to sort through where he was in that story and where all of that came from.
And as film progresses, it moves away a little bit from sort of the conflict between the biographer and the celebrated artist. And I get there's some quite interesting scenes that I think it might be your birthday or something. Just tell us little bit about the relationship you formed with Adam. I mean, while there was a lot of vicious treatment and some pretty barbed comments, I believe he could also be quite warm and humorous at times,
He was compelling company, and he had a gift for making people feel both terrific and terrible. And I was drawn to being around the impishness of his character and playfulness of his character, which carried with it some ugly sides also. But we became very good friends. I was very grieved when he died. But we also were two people bound by a contract that was fairly uneven.
But one of the fascinating scenes also is when Adam's watching Rowan Woods as the boys. Mm. And he knows the dialogue word for word. And I thought, this is quite interesting. I think as a painter who had a sort of fascination in Anita Colby and that. And he also obviously famously painted David Wenham. I was just wondering whether you thought there were sort of some parallels between Adam's character. This sort of, somewhere being a sort of misunderstood rebel. And in that film, you've got the real exemplar in toxic masculinity in the sort of David Wenham character.
I think in both, you know, Wenham's character in The Boys and Adam in Life were two people who believed that they could sever themselves from the strictures of reality and create their own existence. That's why Adam loved The Boys so much. That scene in the film where Adam shoots up and watches The Boys and recites the dialogue is a scene from real life. I found Adam in his lounge room doing that and muttering by the end of the film, you know, Wenno, just call me. He was fixated by these figures in Australian culture. He was fixated insofar as he thought he found in them models for himself. And that's definitely what The Boys represented for him. It was a chance to be the kind of person who, through the force and violence of their character, would create their own existence.